JC Corcoran Podcast.
Hello, James Gaffigan.
There's an echo.
There is.
Now batting for Manny Mota.
I'm going to get rid of that right now.
Well, I have a 20-year-old, a 17-year-old, and a 3.5-year-old. It has been observed that I'm out of my flipping mind. I should be the one writing the book. You should be reading my book.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the, you know, my oldest is 9. So I'm definitely, I mean, this book is just a snapshot. I still have spent more time as an adult without children than as a parent. I go from the assumption that when they're teenagers, it's really easy, right?
Well, not in girls. Girls, that just becomes more and more complicated as time goes on. That's all I make is girls.
Oh, right. You know, I've made two of those. Little girls are, you see little girls versus little boys, and the contrast, but, you know, because little boys are like orangutans. Like, you look at a little boy and you're like, why has there ever been a male president? It's just like the fine motor skills of a little girl versus a little boy, and just the behavior. They're just like raising monkeys, you little boys. And little girls, they're like very sweet and thoughtful, and I mean, they're crazy, but...
Yeah, the claws don't come out until adolescence, and then you have a whole set of problems. Every guy who looks like you and looks like me and seems to also look like all of my friends, as soon as they are introduced to our wives, usually somebody says something like, well, you really outkicked your coverage this time, didn't you?
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, a curious look, you know, where people are like, she doesn't look blind, you know.
Now, speaking of blind, is there something wrong with your eyesight? Dad is Fat is the name of the book. I mean, you know, I'm looking at you, you don't look fat.
Well, you know, that Dad is Fat, the title comes from my now 7-year-old. His first sentence that he wrote on a dry erase board when he was probably 5 was, Dad is Fat. And then he showed it to me, and I immediately put him up for adoption.
And if you could just have one observation to the women of the world and their kids who are listening right now, with Father's Day coming up at the end of the week, what would it be?
I would just say that being a dad is the vice president of the executive branch of parenting, and dads are trying our best. We're just not that good at being grown-ups.
All right. The book is called Dad is Fat, just in time for Father's Day. Jim Gaffigan. Jim, thanks very much for spending a little time with us.
Thank you.
Now, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before. It's like deja vu all over again.
Monday, October 3rd, 2022, 36 days until the midterms. How you doing, kids? You are at jcontheline.com. What is this nonsense with the what? God, they're talking about 36 degrees when you wake up Friday and Saturday morning. 36. Scattered frost in the outlying areas. Well, it is October, I guess. People who live in the Midwest sometimes forget that they live in the Midwest and that this is what happens when you get into early October. And having little kids around all the time, I can recall certain Halloweens in St. Louis where the weather has been just magnificent, and I can remember it being so cold. It was one year, this was one of the first years that my now 13-year-old daughter, she was probably 5, maybe 4 at the time, and was just looking forward to Halloween. It's like, you know, the Seinfeld bit going, candy, everybody's giving away free candy, you know, that sort of stuff. She had 3 houses, and that was it. She was done because the wind was blowing like 60 miles an hour, and the temperature is about 30 degrees. It was just awful. But then I can also remember times we were out just was like maybe 70 degrees. And I'll tell you, I'm pretty sure I have never been to a Halloween party. I've been to a lot of them for kids. I'm talking about adults. I've been invited to a couple, but the idea of dressing up as an adult, that didn't sound right. It sounds like I'm dressing up as an adult. As an adult, the idea of dressing up never has ever occurred to me. It's like, Halloween is for kids. But then you go into the Central West End on Halloween, and if you're a guy, I think you can sort of have a good time as an observer. And again, you just put the word slutty in front of any profession and you have your female Halloween costume. Nurse, slutty nurse. Flight attendant, slutty flight attendant. Newscaster, Angie Mock at Fox 2. Remember her? Remember her? She showed up on camera every morning on Fox 2 looking like she'd been out all night picking up sailors. Now Fox 2 has this blonde who just started. Her name is Laura Simon. I can't figure out what's wrong, but she talks out of one side of her mouth. She's like Edward G. Robinson. Look, here's the news. See? We'll have sports and weather later. See? Well, I've gotten through like 4 whole minutes of the podcast without talking about the weather and the flooding and the hurricane and everything like that in Central and Southern Florida. But it is interesting that people are starting to notice that the word barrier island is being used a lot. And the whole idea of a barrier island is when exceptionally bad weather like hurricanes approach the coast of a large landmass, there's a very thin strand of land that's supposed to protect the main strand of land. But then somebody said, yeah, but I could put a house out there. And somebody said, all right, you know, if a hurricane comes, it's going to just wash the house into the water. And people are like, oh, I'll take that chance. And now with climate change and more hurricanes and more intense hurricanes and hitting places like the Gulf Coast of Florida, seems like even a worse idea. And there's a lot of people who are, you know, have lost everything. You can't get insurance in Florida because guess what? You live on a barrier island and hurricanes come in. People are starting to ask the question of the whether that makes any sense. Sanibel might not even exist anymore. And as far as insurance, 80%, but they say, yeah, 80% of those people were uninsured because the rates are too high, 3 times the national average, like $5,000 a year. Do you ever sit there and think to yourself, how much is all of my stuff? If I had to replace everything in my house, how much would it cost? $10,000? $20,000? That's probably a workable number for like somebody in the middle class. Now, if you've got, you know, art and you are loaded and you buy extraordinarily expensive stuff, obviously, it's going to be different. But just for somebody in the middle class, you know, somebody lives in Crestwood or O'Fallon, Illinois or something like that, start adding things up. And then you start thinking, all right, let's just say for the sake of discussion, all of my stuff is worth $20,000. Let's say you live in Florida and you think to yourself, okay, over the course of 3 years, it would cost me about $15,000 to insure all of my stuff, about $5,000 a year, because the rates are just ridiculous. Now you think to yourself, well, what are the mathematical chances that the area in which I live is going to be hit by a hurricane and that that hurricane is going to be close enough to me to damage or destroy my house? $15,000 over 3 years or $20,000 over 4 years to protect my $20,000 worth of stuff. I'll take my chances. That's what a lot of people think. They fucked up. They found out. And I heard some number that I can't even get my head around, like $600 trillion or something worth of damage when this whole thing is going to be over. And that's the next question. When's it going to be over? My sister and brother-in-law have gone to Sanibel Island every summer for, I don't know, about the last 25 years. They were not able to go for 3 years during COVID. So last summer, and this is just a couple of months ago, we drive down about 2 hours to Sanibel. We hang out with them on the beach. Very, very nice. The condo that they've been renting for years and years, right there on the water. You just walk out of the condo and you walk right onto the beach. That's gone. It's just not even there anymore. And right now, every network, every 24-hour news channel, every buddy is doing news of any kind, has got all their reporters down in Florida. And the question becomes, how long is that going to be? How long until the news departments figure, well, you know, we've sort of beaten this story to death. It's time to move on to something else. Yeah, it's a good question. Usually it's another really, really big story or perhaps another natural disaster. I was sitting on my bench of my baseball team in the dugout yesterday, and everybody was taking the Tampa Bay Bucks. And I said, I don't think so. I don't think so. It's like the old phrase, ain't mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. And right now, Tom Brady's mama ain't happy. And when you fumble on the opening kickoff, man, oh man, that was not the game people were expecting last night. But Patrick Mahomes, by the way, don't call him Pat. That upsets his mother. It's true. Patrick Mahomes was doing things athletically last night that I haven't seen in a long time. The guy is a hell of an athlete, and there are problems with the Tampa Bay Bucks and Tom Brady. Nice ceremony before the ball game yesterday. Nice home run and the RBIs by Albert. As soon as these three games with Pittsburgh are over and we know what Albert's final home run total is going to be, I can just picture millions of t-shirts popping up all over the place with like 702 or something on it. In the meantime, Tony La Russa going to announce his retirement again today. I saw an interesting stat. The Cardinals have had a Hall of Famer on their roster, or as they say in South County, roster. The Cardinals have had a Hall of Famer on their roster every year since 1909. Now, some of them obviously were going to one day be a Hall of Famer, but every year since 1909, somebody on the Cardinal roster has eventually made it to the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. That's incredible. Going back to football, scapegoat. Fire the doctor with the Dolphins. This is a systemic problem in the NFL. They've got to completely redo their concussion protocol. They're trying to blame all this on one schlub doctor in Southern Florida. This is pervasive throughout the National Football League. Now, in their defense, I will say they said that they there may be major changes in the concussion protocol for the National Football League by the end of the week. And while they're testing people, they might want to test a couple of the officials, because if you were watching a game last night, or this was yesterday afternoon with the Packers, two delay of game calls that weren't called. I think the fact that the Packers came back and won the game in overtime was like what we used to say when we were kids, cheaters proof, because, man, they got screwed on that one call because it led to a touchdown. But why are some plays not reviewable? Because they got that in baseball, too. It's just, all right, let's watch, timeout, we're going to watch the video. And then certain plays, they're like, well, that play's non-reviewable. Why? You got the cameras all over the place. You have the system set up to review plays. You always say, our goal is we're trying to get it right. We're trying to get it right. Oh, sorry, that call's not reviewable. You have a camera on the scoreboard with the play clock. And it's like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, and they still haven't snapped. And it's like 2 or 3 seconds later. I'm sorry, that's non-reviewable. I'm going to look that up. Or if Ted, if you know that, our buddy Ted Williams, who does a lot of research for the show just because he's a nice guy, I'm not paying him or anything, but he finds out stuff like that. Why are some plays unreviewable in football and in baseball? It makes no sense to me. By the way, it reminds me of a great story, this whole idea about Tony La Russa retiring, because this goes back to when I was on one of those AM talk stations in St. Louis. And there's about a week left in the season, and it appears that the Cardinals are not going to make the playoffs. Now, again, this is a week left in the season. This is 2011. And I get a call on a Sunday afternoon going, I just found out they're setting up the interview room at Busch Stadium. Tony La Russa is going to announce his retirement. And I said, you mean he's going to resign as manager of the Cardinals? Like, no, he's going to retire. They're setting up the interview room right now. The interview room, as soon as this game is over, Tony La Russa is going to sit in front of the cameras. And with a week left in the season, he's going to say, I have had it. I'm retiring from Major League Baseball. I call one of my sort of higher up contacts with the Cardinals and I say, is this true? And there's just dead silence on the other end of the phone, almost as if to suggest, how in the hell did you find this out? And the girl left me with a sort of like, I haven't heard that. But I sort of could tell that she, in fact, had heard it. Either that or she was really doing a good job lying. And if you're saying to yourself, hey, wait a minute, he didn't retire. Well, here's what happened. There was a couple of dramatic developments around the league and with the Cardinals, who had been losing the game. I think this might have been the Scott Spezio game. Remember the kid who had the soul patch? He had that red soul patch on his chin. Okay, so I think that was the game where he had a triple or something and changed the game. And then a couple of other things happened in the game. Some teams that were ahead were losing. Keep in mind, you know, you're scoreboard watching here, and if you're right on the cusp, I think was that the year that the Cardinals only won 88 games but still made it into the playoffs? Some of these memories are a little fuzzy, but I'm pretty sure I'm at least in the area here, okay? So in the course of about an hour, it goes from Tony La Russa is going to announce his retirement to, hey, wait a minute, no, we're still in this now. Look at this, because we won, and look at the Mets lost, something happened, all of a sudden it's like, no, wait a minute here. We may make the playoffs after all. So they cancel the news conference after the game. Now, the Cardinals finish out the week, they make the playoffs, they go on to win the World Series in 2011, and the day after the parade, what happens? Tony La Russa walks up to the podium and retires from Major League Baseball. But during that week, during that 1 week from the time that they were ready to stage that press conference to the time that we went into the playoffs, I went to every sportscaster, every reporter in St. Louis that I knew, and I told them that story. And they all looked at me like I was crazy. Just totally dismissive. A lot of these guys are friends of mine. I go up to Frank Cusimano and I tell him this, and he just sort of looks at me like, you're out of your mind. One of the guys said, okay, I'm going to go ask John Mozeliak if this is true. And there are other media liaisons or people who work with the media, serve as a conduit between the reporters and the organization and everything like that. Those people are paid. It's like the Rams lying about moving. Their job is to tell reporters wrong information. Okay, it's to mislead them. Their job is to make sure that we don't find out what's going on in the inner workings, especially with regard to something as sensitive as this. That's their job. Kevin Demoff? Are you serious? It's like that David Spade character. Yeah, he's had a really bad day today. You're going to have to just please take a seat. But I'll tell you this. So then, when Tony La Russa did announce his retirement, suddenly a whole bunch of people found out who I was and started following me. I had Twitter at the time, and my Twitter subscription rate went through the roof because somebody figured he must know something. But the whole thing turned ugly then with the Albert Pujols thing because I got greedy and then I screwed up, but that's another story. But that's how you find out things. You know, people always say, well, I know the president, I know the vice president, I know the director of media relations, I know this guy, I know that guy. It's like, those people are not going to tell you, and that's not how you find out stories. You know how TMZ and the National Enquirer and people like, you know how they find out stories? And I'm not talking about those goofy headlines where some kid locks himself in a refrigerator and eats his own foot to stay alive. I'm talking about the real stories where you're like, well, that's interesting. The National Enquirer is getting a lot of these stories right. How are they finding out? Same thing with TMZ. How are they finding these things out? Well, you don't go from the top down. You go from down up. And you start talking to people like parking lot attendants. You know, the ones that see everybody come and go. You talk to some kid making minimum wage in the office. You talk to somebody's wife. You start at the bottom and you work your way up. Those are the people. These people know everything. I just finished telling you the Tom Petty story the other day because yesterday, of course, was the anniversary of his passing. And our friend Teresa, photographer from St. Louis, moved out to L.A. back in the 80s and became a very good photographer, and especially with regard to the photographing of major music stars and also people who are coming up in the business who she has reason to believe might be a big deal somewhere down the line. But anyhow, I get this call. We find out that Tom Petty's been taken to the hospital. But we had a world exclusive on the passing of Tom Petty because Teresa is standing right outside the hospital room going, yeah, he passed away about 20 minutes ago. I'm like, you're standing right there with Tom Petty's people, his family, his entourage. You're standing outside of the hospital room and you can tell me unequivocally that Tom Petty has passed away. Yep, he's gone. It's really, really sad. I go on the air immediately and make the announcement. We beat the national media by something like 2 hours because that's when they finally held their news conference and made it official. But we knew and we told you about that almost 2 hours before it was confirmed on a national basis. Why? Not because we went to Tom Petty's publicist, not because we went to his manager, not because we went to anything like that. I just happen to have a friend who lives in California and knew Tom Petty's people, and she told me about it. This is how you find out these stories. Let's talk Saturday Night Live. There sure was a lot of energy on that show. I don't know how funny the whole thing was. Weekend Update was good. The opening bit with, what's his name? Miles Teller. Miles Teller, the host of the show. And they do a cold open with him portraying Peyton Manning, and he was fabulous. The bit was really funny, too. You know, you got a lot of new cast members, and they were making direct references to the fact that they had all the new cast members. And they got a lot of people like Chloe Fineman, who's going to get a lot more time on camera now. And, of course, Bowen Yang, who's the best thing that's happened to Saturday Night Live since Eddie Murphy. So all that stuff is going on. I don't know what that Kendrick Lamar stuff was, but it's not music. I'm sorry. But there was one really funny exchange, one little funny segment in Weekend Update.
Jenny Thomas, who's begging you to notice the scarf. So she can say, oh, this old thing? Reportedly told the committee that her husband was unaware of her involvement in challenges to the 2020 election, and they never discuss any case before the court. And if there's one thing I believe, it's that this guy doesn't talk to his wife.
Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene revealed that her husband has filed for divorce after 27 years of marriage. He officially blamed irreconcilable differences for the split, while she blamed the Jews.
President Biden on Friday attended a formal ceremony welcoming Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson to the Supreme Court. Said Biden, and where's Justice Ginsburg? Ruth, come on up here.
Pretty good stuff. Those guys are on their game. Those guys are on their game. All right, you got a Monday Night Football game tonight on ESPN 715. 49ers hosting the Rams. Miss USA on FYI. Is that a channel? I've never even heard of that. And that's where beauty pageants belong right now, on a cable channel you're not even sure you have. Late night tonight, Naomi Watts on with Jimmy Fallon. Kimmel's got Charlie Hunnam and Eliza Schlesinger. I guess I'm supposed to know who those people are. I don't. Sorry. Nancy Pelosi on with Colbert. Rosie O'Donnell on with James Corden. This is not an all-star lineup tonight, is it? Constance Wu on with Seth Meyers. The horror movie Smile topped the box office over the weekend. Billy Eichner's comedy Bros tanked, but he's proud of it. The reviews now that this thing has popped up on streaming, is it on Amazon or Netflix? I forget. But this new Marilyn Monroe movie called Blonde, people are really laying into this thing, including Emily Ratajkowski, who says the new Marilyn Monroe movie fetishizes female pain. And she might not be far off. Rachel Ray taping some episodes of her show in Ukraine this month. John Mellencamp going on a 76-date tour next year. Tickets go on sale Friday. I didn't even check to see if St. Louis is one of the stops. Let me do that. Neil Young with the new album with Crazy Horse coming out next month. Terry Bradshaw shared that he's cancer-free after battling it twice over the last year. A stampede at a soccer match in Indonesia. 125 people killed. 125. They stormed the field. A lot of those people, by the way, were kids attending their first ever soccer game. My curiosity's got the best of me here. I got to see if St. Louis is one of the stops on the the Mellencamp tour. Oh, he's coming here. He's coming here in Florida in February. Chicago, April 13th and 14th, the Chicago Theater. Great place to see a show, by the way. Here we go. Stiefel Theater, April 21st. Oh, and a second date on the 22nd. So two dates, 21st and 22nd, Mellencamp in St. Louis. Birthdays today, the guy who played Stifler in the American Pie movies, Sean William Scott, 46, Nev Campbell, 49, Gwen Stefani, 53, Clive Owen, great actor, 58, Tommy Lee, Motley Crue, 60, Al Sharpton, 68, Dave Winfield, Hall of Famer, 71, Lindsey Buckingham, Fleetwood Mac, well, it was with Fleetwood Mac, 73, Chubby Checker, I interviewed him at the VP Fair about 30 years ago, doing the twist, 81, would have been Stevie Ray Vaughan's birthday today, he would have been 68, 35, when his helicopter went down. Elvis won $5 for second place at a talent show at the Mississippi-Alabama Dairy Show on this date 77 years ago. He was 10. Woody Woodpecker debuted on this date on ABC in 1957. The Woody Woodpecker Show. I still remember Walter Lantz. Walter Lantz was the guy who was the animator. And at the end of every show, they'd show you how they do some of the animation. Then you would try it yourself and you would fail miserably. Charles in Charge debuted on this date in 1984, 38 years ago. OJ was found not guilty on this date 27 years ago, 1995. And over the weekend, we celebrated the fourth anniversary of getting our dog, Luna. Now, I've belabored this story. I've told it so many times. We had a dog named Harry, purebred, yellow lab, first marriage. Only a couple of months after the divorce, the dog gets sick. We find out he's got an inoperable tumor, and he has to be put down. He's only 9. And it's like the song Mr. Bojangles. The dog up and died. After 20 years, he still grieves. It took me 19 years before I could get another dog. I was so crushed. I've lost cats. I've lost, when you're little, I think it was 10, a hamster of mine died, Zelda. But when you're an adult and you lose a dog, as a lot of you know, it's absolutely devastating. Across the street from our house, we had a dog, and I'm using past tense here, named Samson, St. Bernard. And Samson would come over and play with Luna all the time, and we loved Samson. And on Saturday, Samson got some sort of medical condition that started to produce seizures. And on Saturday evening, just moments after they got him to the vet, the poor dog passed away at the age of only 3. And our family and the owner's family just devastated. We used to refer to Samson as Luna's boyfriend. And it's just so weird. On the weekend where you're celebrating the arrival of the dog that you have now, the dog across the street passes away. And I really feel sorry for people who make fun. You know, you wait till the person's gone and then you start laughing behind their back because they're all crushed because their dog or their cat passed away. I feel sorry for people like that because it means they're cruel, number one. And number two, they've never probably experienced the joy of having a particularly kind of memorable relationship with an animal. So they don't understand how the animal can be part of the family and how when you lose that animal, especially in an untimely fashion, how devastating that can be. Well, I haven't played this in a very, very long time. But for those of you, and it just seems like everybody I know has lost a dog in the last year or so. It's like every couple of months, I see a friend of mine is, telling the story about, the significance of the presence of that animal has been in their family for, 10, 15 years. Anyhow, to sort of finish off today, we're going to hand it off to Jimmy Stewart.
Now, the title of it is Bo. That's the name of the dog. He never came to me when I would call unless I had a tennis ball or he felt like it. But mostly, he didn't come at all. When he was young, he never learned to heel or sit or stay. He did things his way. Discipline was not his bag, but when you were with him, things sure didn't drag. He'd dig up a rose bush just to spite me, and when I'd grab him, he'd turn and bite me. He bit lots of folks from day to day. The delivery boy was his favorite prey. The gas man wouldn't read our meter. He said we owned a real man-eater. He set the house on fire, but the story's long to tell. Suffice to say that he survived and the house survived as well. And on evening walks, and Gloria took him, he was always first out the door. The old one and I brought up the rear because our bones were sore. And he'd charge up the street with Mom hanging on. What a beautiful pair they were. And if it was still light and the tourists were out, they created a bit of a stir. But every once in a while, he'd stop in his tracks and with a frown on his face, look around. It was just to make sure that the old one was there to follow him where he was bound. We're early to bedders in our house. I guess I'm the first to retire. And as I'd leave the room, he'd look at me and get up from his place by the fire. He knew where the tennis balls were upstairs, and I'd give him one for a while, and he'd push it under the bed with his nose, and I'd dig it out with a smile. But before very long, he'd tire of the ball, and he'd be asleep in his corner in no time at all. And there were nights when I'd feel him climb upon our bed and lie between us, and I'd pat his head. And there were nights when I'd feel this stare, and I'd wake up and he'd be sitting there, and I'd reach out to stroke his hair, and sometimes I'd feel him sigh, and I think I know the reason why. He'd wake up at night and he would have this fear of the dark, of life, of lots of things, and he'd be glad to have me near. And now he's dead. And there are nights when I think I feel him climb upon her bed and lie between us, and I pat his head. And there are nights when I think I feel that stare, and I reach out my hand to stroke his hair, and he's not there. Oh, how I wish that wasn't so. I'll always love a dog named Bo.
Nowhere to go after that. So we will say adieu. That's it for the J.C. Corcoran podcast. Monday, October 3rd, 2022, 36 days until the midterms. We're here every weekday morning just after 7 o'clock. We archive all of the podcasts. You may email me, jc@jconline.com. Facebook, we're at The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Have a great day, everybody. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran podcast.